Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFBA. Brought to you by EV Mobility, here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Town Talk powered this morning by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, tourstaffordva.com. We're talking Stafford's African-American history this morning with a couple of favorites, all-time favorites. Sue Henderson is here with the Stafford Museum and Cultural Center, and Frank White is here, the keeper of knowledge in Stafford. Good morning to both of you. Thank you for getting up this morning.
Morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
Thank you.
This is going to be a fun show, Sue, just because we're dealing with Frank knows so many stories.
Yeah.
And Frank, you tell stories, and I know a few that will probably come up about a time in Stafford, not that long ago, and we're really fortunate to have you and others here that are able to tell some of these stories.
I think it's even more important, at least from the historical context, that Frank has dug into a lot of historical records that nobody else has found. And one of them, we were talking about this the other day, Frank and I, and one of them was the Conway Colony. Right. So we all know about the Moncur Conway House, which you can go by and see and read the marker over there in Falmouth along River Road. But Frank, what did you discover about the Conway Colony that people didn't know what happened to them? Right. Moncur took all the slaves and from the house,
right.
from the estate.
People didn't know what happened to them. And I was with the Stafford Historical Society, and they were having a meeting at the Conway House. And Moncur Conway had gone to Yellow Springs, but the schools wanted to know what happened to the Conway Colony. So they asked me to find out. So I did some researching and finally contacted somebody in Ohio. And they told me about Yellow Springs, Ohio. And then they told me about the Conway Colony that came to Yellow Springs. So that's what happened.
So was there a large... How many did he take with him, do we know?
Between 30 and 50.
Right. I mean, that's quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And were they all from the Conway estates that he took?
Most of them were from the Conway estate, but some of them were from others. You know. And then he had a little difficulty going anyway, because once he got to Baltimore, they had to change trains. And they had to go from one train station to the other, and they had to walk the streets of Baltimore. And what happened... the whites saw them, they thought that they were going to escape in something, so they started aggravating them.
Yeah.
And then they talked to the blacks and they said, we're going to freedom. So,
what year was this then? Or what are we talking about as far as kind of a timeline?
About in the 1860s.
Okay.
Before the war?
No, this was after the war. Before the war, right.
Before the war. Right. So right. Late 1850s maybe, but... Mm-hmm. And so he took them up to Ohio.
Took them to Yellow Springs, Ohio.
Was Yellow Springs a town then, or do we know? Or was it just like they created a town?
Yellow Springs was a rural area, something like Falmouth.
Yeah,
it was a rural area. But that's where Moncur Conway had friends. Mm-hmm. And so he knew that he could take them to where his friends were. And Ohio was a town, was a state that was a free state. So that's mainly his objective, was to take him to a free state.
So Moncur Conway was who? Who was he in Stafford?
Well, the Conway family was really well-respected.
Okay.
And obviously they were slaveholders.
Yeah.
But he was the abolitionist, right? He was sort of the black sheep of the family. They weren't very happy with him.
He was abolitionist, and his mother was from the North. And all his other brothers went and fought for the Confederate. Now, Moncur and Conway left in a hurry because some of his friends were torn further him. So he had to leave in a hurry when he came to visit. And that really upset him.
To do the research that you did, Frank, to find all of this, how difficult was that?
I went through email, and I knew it went to Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally found out an African-American website, in Ohio, a historical website in Ohio, and I contacted them and told them what I wanted to do, and they contacted me. And kind of interesting was because I was part of the Stop Historical Society, and the Stop Historical Society were used to have their meetings in various places. This one particular day, night, they were going to have their meeting at the Moncrief Conway House with Norman and the other schools.
Yeah.
Well, and the speaker was going to be Dr. Jim Bryant. Dr. Jim Bryant at that time was working with the National Park Service, and he was a historian. And he was going to speak about Moncrief Conway. Well, the night before the meeting, I got an email from Ohio and said that I got an email from Ohio, and a lady said that she was part of the Moncrief Conway descendants. And so when they had the meeting, I went to and I asked another school. I said, look, I finally found the Moncrief Conway colony. And I know Dr. Bryant is going to speak about Moncrief Conway, but I would like to just say a few words to the fact that I have located the colony. So they did let me speak, and I told them what I'd done. And so eventually they had the state of Ohio put a marker on Antioch College. That was in Yellow Springs. And I found out on Antioch College that it said something else too. Dr. Martin Luther King's wife, LaDella Scott King, and her sister went to Antioch College. And that was a place where Dr. King, when he wanted to get away from the press, and he would go there, and they wouldn't even let him know that he was there, but he would go there and rest and relaxation, as they say in the military.
Is Antioch an a historic black college, or is it... was it mixed race, or was
it mixed race?
Mixed race started by the colony or the people that had colonized there from here.
Right.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
I mean, I don't know. I haven't looked it up, but I'm guessing that college was begun before 1900. So that was pretty impressive if it was mixed then.
Well, see, Moncrief Conway knew.
Well, that's true.
About the college, and he knew his they had what they call a Conway colony, and it was put on land where the college is.
Ah.
And they put a marker 300 years of Ohio, and they put a marker there for the Conway colony. They put a two-sided marker. One side was Eliza and Dunmore Grin, and the other side was talking about Moncrief Conway.
And who is Elijah and Dunmore?
Oh, Eliza and Dunmore Grin, they were the leaders of the colony.
Right.
Something about Eliza, when the Union soldiers came to Stafford, and somebody took a shot at them, and they were going to burn this house down, Moncrief Conway house down, and Eliza Grin said, so this is Moss Conway's house. Say he's a Yankee.
Yeah.
And they saw his photo on the wall, and somebody recognized the photo. So, oh, yeah, that's Moncrief Conway. Leave this house alone. And the house could not get burned down.
Interesting.
It is.
That's one of the last – I mean, you know, it is a rare house that still exists from, you know, that era, certainly in Falmouth. I mean, so much construction and floods and everything else. But what was the status now of that area? I assume it's no longer considered the Conway Colony. It's just a reference to, it's just Yellow Springs, Ohio, right?
Yellow Springs, Ohio, it's a city. Now, they still have descendants there. And they started a church. When me and the Netter Schools went out there, we went to the church and we went to the unveiling of the marker. We met a lot of people, and I've been back several times since, go to the colony, and also it's an Air Force base not too far away,
mm-hmm.
and I went there for reunions, and I would go by the Yellow Spring. And there was something else interesting I found out about, and I didn't know about this, but I met a lady there, and she said that she was a black lady, and she said that she was in World War II. And she said that she was in England in World War II, and she worked in for the Postal Service. Mm. It didn't mean anything to me then. But later, I found out about the fact that they had a bunch of women over there in England.
Yeah.
And they cleared up the mail. And it made the backlog. They cleared up the backlog of mail. And here recently, they gave some award to that group. I think one or two.
Oh, they did give an award. Yeah, I did hear. About that. Mm-hmm. There was a kind of a posthumous or a belated award to the entire group of these
triple six or something like
that. Yeah, yeah. Interesting. You just meet all sorts of interesting people when you're tracking down history.
You do. I mean, just that you were able to do this, Frank, and it's amazing. And just the stories in Stafford, and we're going to talk about that with the Stafford Museum and Cultural Center is aiming to do. Sue Anderson here, Frank White here. We're talking Stafford's African American history this morning. Quick break. We'll be back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility, here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Sue Anderson in this morning from the Stafford Museum and Cultural Center, along with Frank White, the keeper of knowledge. And we're talking Stafford's African-American history. We move forward, Sue.
Right. So this is another one of these mysteries that Frank's been digging into, and I really want him to tell you about, because he just told me about it last week, and I'm like, wait, what? So there's this this Dr. John Moncur. We're talking about 1915 or so, right? But what's the story, Frank? He was a Episcopal deacon or something down in Richmond?
Reverend John Moncur was the city missionary for the Protestant Episcopal churches down in Richmond, for both black and white. And he would go around to the various churches, and he would also go around to the correctional institutions, prisons, jails, and stuff. Well, he went down to one in Richmond, and it was with a guy called Spotswood Brown. And Spotswood Brown at first didn't want to fool with John Moncur, but when he came out, the officer would let him get out of his cell just to listen to John Moncur, because it was religious.
Mm-hmm.
So he got out of his cell just to listen to John Moncur. And then eventually he became the guy who, when Reverend John Moncur was coming, he was the guy to tell the other prisoners, y'all come on, let's go, let's listen to John Moncur. He's a good guy. When time for him to get released, nobody was there for Spotswood Brown. Spotswood Brown walked outside the gate, and standing at the gate was John Moncur. And John Moncur took him in as an aide. And so whenever he went down to the visitor churches or whatever, John Moncur would take him. Well, when John Moncur came to Stafford to his visit home, he would also bring Spotswood Brown. One day in 1912, they were out on the creek, and
is that a quiet creek?
No, it wasn't a quiet. It was.
It don't matter. So it's one of the creeks.
Yeah, it was another creek. It was Chappawabic.
I got you.
Chappawabic Creek, and they were out there in a boat. Well, something happened, and Spotswood Brown fell in the water. John Moncur jumped into the water to get him, and John Moncur was kind of old guy at that time. He tried to save him and couldn't save him, so he went toward the shore. When he got to the shore, he died of a heart attack. Spotswood Brown drowned. Now, the colored Episcopal churches in Richmond felt so much about John Moncur and Spotswood Brown that they wanted to provide a school and a church in Stafford, and they wanted to call it the John Moncur Chapel and School. And they erected a John Moncur Chapel, and it was a member of John Moncur. And they raised $1,900 to build a church. And it was built, and it didn't last that long. And one of the reasons why it didn't last that long, because most of the blacks in Stafford County at the time were Baptists, not Episcopal.
Yeah.
But they did have a bishop, and his, and he stayed there for a while, and he left. And
so where was the church? It was up kind of Widewater area or off Route 1, or do we know?
It was on Route 1 about a couple of miles from the county, next county up.
Oh, from Prince William County.
Prince William County.
So yeah. Almost up there towards Quantico, what is Quantico now.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was quite a bit up there in northern. But so this was, what's the significance of that? That it was the only time that there was a historic black church that wasn't Baptist?
It was the only time a historic black church that wasn't Baptist.
Really?
And then what happened when they not only did they have a church, they had school. And what happened when the church school closed, Back in those days, all of the churches had schools, like Low Forest, Bethlehem, all had schools. So what they did, they transferred the students from the John Moncure Memorial Chapel School to Low Forest School, because Low Forest Church was as close to school to that area.
So when you say all the churches had schools, you really mean all the black churches had
schools. All the black churches, right.
Right, because the white churches didn't have schools, they had public schools.
They had public schools.
Right. Yeah. Right. So there's the difference. It's this essential thing. And we just celebrated the other day at Martin Luther King Day. There's six that are more than 100 right. years mm-hmm. old in Stafford, which is really saying something, because that's the heart of that community. And mm-hmm. it also helped with transportation and everything else. Right.
Right. Right.
So when you say that these were the schools, isn't that sort of that same era or coming close up to when they were intentionally trying to, like, a lot of Jim Crow laws and everything else were happening in the state? And they were intentionally forcing people to choose whether they were black or white or whatever.
Right.
There wasn't whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You were white or not.
You had to go one way or the other.
Yeah, you were white or not.
You were white or not. And, yeah. and if you were, and then if you were Native American, you had to go one way or the other also. And a lot of them went over to the white side. But it's a lot of people, a lot of Native Americans, a lot of whites, that are intermingled.
Sure.
Now, we talked about the Lovins, and, you know, Virginia's for Lover and all that. But about several years ago, the Moncures had a reunion in the farmers' part of Stafford. And they had black Moncures and white Moncures. And they had this reunion, a big write-up in the newspaper.
Yeah,
I don't know if you remember that. You remember that?
Well, that's the way any landed gentry family intermingled, you know, by force many times. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's just like, you know, genealogy now is just making it impossible to assume that you're all anything. You know, you can't be all Polish, or you can't, it's just not possible to be all white or all black anymore, mostly. Everybody's got something else in them. But I just think it was really interesting that this is sort of a lost church.
Yeah.
It's now torn down. Nobody really, you sort of, there's a cemetery or no?
I have a picture of the church, but I've really not been able to find it. I think it
from the newspaper, right? I mean, that because it was 1900s, right? It was 1915 or so.
Right,
so
right.
That was reasonable. A reasonable source is to look for papers and
right.
newspapers, at least once they were printed like that.
Okay.
But there was also something you said about, there's a couple people related to that church that are buried at Aquia Episcopal Church, yeah?
Right. Spotswood Brown is buried at Aquia Episcopal Church.
Right.
And it's another lady buried at Aquia Episcopal Church. And her name was Evangelist, but didn't have a last name, but she was a slave at the Somerset, the Moncure, the Somerset place in Stafford. Now, during the early war, the Yankees came to the gate and came to the farm and said, okay, you can all go free. They started walking away. And this Somerset was somewhere near Quantico. When they got to the gate, Evangeline saw one of the elder Moncures coming back. And she said, look, if we all go, who's going to cook? Who's going to take care of them? So she went back to the house. And she stayed with them until she died at the age of 91. And so she never, you know, she never left.
She never left.
She never left. Now, she stayed with the Moncure family. She went to D.C., you know, but still, she never married, anything like that. And she's also buried at Aqua Episcopal Church. Several years ago, they had a program at Aqua Episcopal Church talking about some of the people who were buried at Aqua Episcopal Church, and they recognized Spotswood Brown and Evelina Green, I think her name was.
It's just fascinating.
It is.
You know, it's fascinating. And, I mean, Aqua Episcopal Church is right there at Route 1 and more or less 610, more or less, right about there. Mm-hmm. And you can contact them and go inside, but the church grounds are open, and the you can certainly see, because that's also a pretty famous place for the sandstone. The local Aqua sandstone created a lot of the exterior.
Yeah, from Government Island and all.
Yeah.
Yep.
They contacted the Historical Society to, you had to talk about them. I was Spotswood Brown. So I told the history of Spotswood Brown. And Doris McAdams was Evangelina Green.
Yeah.
And we talked. And then after that, you had to go out and stand by the grave. And the people come in, you know, you talk.
So. I remember that program.
So you remember
program.
The program?
I do.
Interesting. Town Talk powered this morning by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. Frank White here, Sue Henderson here. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is 8:30.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Opinions. We've all got them. And we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk, brought to you by EV Mobility, here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubert.
Stafford's African American History, our focus this morning. Sue Henderson is here. Frank White is here. Sue with the Stafford Museum. And Cultural Center. Great stuff this morning, Sue. This is just
it's fabulous.
Yeah, these stories. I need to get you and Frank in more to talk about this.
Well, listen, I want Frank to talk about a little bit later in 20th century. I want him to talk about when he was in high school and what happened one day when you were on the bus driving past the Moncure Conway House that you didn't even know was important then.
Well, wait, Frank's driving the bus.
No, he's riding the
bus. He's riding the bus.
No. Well, I was actually not riding the bus at that day because I had a part-time job. I was going to Walker Grant. Stafford did not have a high school, and I was high school in Walker Grant. So I had a part-time job in Fredericksburg. But the bus went down came down Route 1, and then went down under the Falmouth Bridge and went River Road. And during that year, we had about a half a dozen different bus drivers.
And this was the black bus?
Yeah, the black bus.
Yeah.
Black bus right there.
Well, when are we talking? 50?
55.
Right.
1955. Okay. We had the black bus. Okay. But the last bus driver we had began in May of 55. And he was a white guy. Well, I used to like to sit on the front seat because watch the guy drive and all this kind of change gears and all this kind of stuff. I enjoyed that anyway. But I noticed that he had a Coca-Cola bottle on the heater. And then one day, I noticed that it smelled kind of funny. That was in May and June. He started driving the first part of May.
Yeah.
Well, I figured, somebody else will be in September. September came, and he started driving again. Well, I got a part-time job in Fredericksburg at the time after school, and came home that day, and my sister was all upset. And my brother was all upset. And I said, what happened? They said, we had an incident on the bus. What happened on the bus? the bus driver. Our bus driver went number one, then went down under Falmouth Bridge to Chatham Bridge. That bus driver, once he got down off of number one, went down under Falmouth Bridge, on River Road, he started doing like that.
Weaving back and forth.
Weaving back and forth. The kids were screaming and all of this. My sister was a senior, and she had a cousin who was a senior. When they got to the Chatham Bridge, they said, look, everybody get off the bus. That guy could be a wreck going down there. So everybody got off the bus except my brother, who was in the 7th grade, and his friend was in 7th grade. They said that bus brought us down, brought us back home, they're going to take us home. They took the bus home. They walked across the bridge and got rides home. Because people worked at the Sylvania plant and all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, they would know them. So they'd pile in the car. Sometimes half a dozen of them getting one car.
Yeah.
But they would go home.
So by the time you got home, everybody was upset about how this guy must have been drunk driving on the bus.
Everybody was upset. Well, my father, when I got home, my father had gone up to the guy's house, and he'd taken my cousin up there to the guy's house and wanted to talk to the driver. Well, the bus was parked in his yard. The switch was still on because it joked out. His wife said he was so drunk, couldn't even get out of bed. My cousin took the bus and drove it up to Mr. Gale's office. At that time, Mr. Gale's office was Low Falls School. And my father said, look, told him what had happened. He says, I'm going to be out there, and we are not going to let anybody get on that bus the next school day.
Sure.
And so Mr. Gale said, well, we hard to find bus drivers. Can you drive the bus? He said, no. He said, I work for Dahlgren. I got a government job. I'm going to quit my job driving no bus. He said, well, can you find someone to drive the bus? My father said, no. It's not my job to find someone. You superintendent, it's your job to find someone to drive the bus. My father, he would tell you what he thought. And he told him that. And so they took the bus. Like I said, went up to Mr. Gale's office. So then my cousin worked at Sylvania Plant. Well, he was a part-time bus driver sometimes. So he said, okay, I will drive the bus until you get somebody. So the next day, this was a Friday, and Monday was a holiday. He said, look, he said, you know, Frank, he said, you can drive that bus.
How old were you?
I was 16. I just got my license about a month ago. He said, you can drive that bus. I said, I can? He said, yeah. He said, look, I have a ton and a half truck, and you drive that. So if you can drive my ton and a half truck, you can drive the bus. I said, okay. He took me up to Mr. Gale's office and said, look, I got a bus driver for you. Mr. Gale said, well, I'll take your word for it, but he's only 16. His father has to sign for it because he's not old enough yet. So went back to my father. My father went back up there the next day or something like that and said, look, my son is not going to drive that bus. Number one, he only got his license about a month ago. He's immature. He's only 16, and you ought to be somebody else driving a bus. It's a big responsibility to drive a school bus with all them kids on there. And I'm sitting right there, you know, listening to him, to drive that school bus. He said, well, it's hard to find school bus drivers. He said, like I said before, it's not my job to find, it's your job to find one. He said, now, you're talking about your son, and your cousin said that he can drive the bus. Why don't you give him a chance? And my father did one of them looks, you know, and took his head, did one of his head shake and all that kind of. He says, okay. Went and got my bus driver license. I had three brothers. And I drove a 16-year-old kid. I was driving a school bus with 70 kids on it.
70?
70 kids on it. But it wasn't that many on it, but I mean, you know, because we had right. Another bus that had to go to another school.
Mm-hmm.
70 kids. And I'm thinking, you know, but I did it. My other brothers, my three brothers, when they became 16, the day they became 16, a couple of days later, they took them out of class, took them up to DMV to get the school bus driver's license. So for the next 10 years, that school bus sat in our yard or across the road. But we drove that school bus, and at 16.
How hard was it to get the license, though? You told me you had to go down here to Dorothy Hart Center, right? Yeah. What is now the Dorothy Hart Center?
Yeah, Dorothy Hart Center. Get the license. There was a lady there. I can't think of her name now. But I was nervous. And they gave me a bus, this was 1955. They gave me a 1941 bus.
Ooh.
And, you know, I was nervous, automatic. It wasn't automatic transmission, all that kind of stuff. You know, nervous, the bus shaking like this and all that kind of stuff. And I figured that I wasn't going to pass it. I passed the test, the driving test, you know, the written test. And she says, can you drive this bus? I said, ma'am, this is the old bus. It's 1941. The gears are hard to change. The brakes don't work good. It doesn't stir too good.
But I'll give it a shot.
Did you just have to make a big, big circle around the block, like a large block?
Right. Yeah. Go around a circle, right. And when I get back, I said, I know I didn't pass that test, the driving test. I knew I passed the written test. Well, you go sit down, and then about 15, 20 minutes, he called, okay, come on, get your license, you know. I got it. But it was interesting. But what I did now, what did I did do? Instead of going down River Road, I would turn at Butler Road,
mm-hmm.
and go down past Earl's and hit Route 3 that way, because I didn't want the kids to be afraid of going down River Road. See, and I figured, you know, I had enough sense to know that, you know, they'd probably still be nervous going down River Road. So I didn't go that way. I went down.
But it must have been easier to go Butler Road anyway. You didn't have to worry about changing gears so much. I mean, going down that hill under the bridge, making that tight turn. I mean, I don't know. I'm just
No. Going it was the other way because it was a straight shot going River Road.
Yeah.
See? Yeah.
And it wasn't on going Butler.
Yeah, but going the other road, you had, you know, sometimes I got behind a bus and all that kind of stuff. You had to stop, right?
You were the bus that somebody was getting stuck behind.
Not many 16-year-olds can talk about driving a bus.
They don't do it anymore.
No, I would hope not.
But it really does show of a time. I mean, was it just that bus drivers were hard to come by like they are now, Frank, do you think? Or was it because it was the black school bus?
I really don't know. I think bus drivers were really hard to come by.
Yeah.
And something else, too, that back then, we went to Walker Grant, and we had to wait until Walker Grant got out on a snow day. We had to wait until Walker Grant got out and go down to Stafford Training School, and then pick up the kids and then go home, say.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they didn't, Walker Grant didn't have buses. They walked to school. So what happened a lot of times, it was you'd go home, you know, snowing and the road slick and all this kind of stuff. You hit your brake, no bus, slide a little bit. And old kids get nervous, wouldn't say anything. So I look up in the mirror and say, look, don't get scared until I get scared. I'm shaking my boots. But we got, you know, we'd have got them there, you know.
So Walker Grant at that time was what, 11th and 12th grade?
Yeah, 12th grade.
Right, just 12th grade.
Yeah, but Walker Grant was
For the black kids from Stafford, though.
Yeah, 11th and 12th
grade. 11th and 12th grade.
Right.
So you went to what is now the Rouser, the Stafford Training School, until
9th and 10th
grade. 9th and 10th grade. And then after that, you were done in Stafford unless you got on a bus and went to Walker Grant.
But see, you still had to go on the bus to go to the pool school.
Yeah.
And then all the buses would come in, and then one bus would take it to Walker Grant.
Right.
See, so every day we got to Walker Grant late. And, but it was. And then the roads, the country roads, you know, on the snow and stuff, you get these country roads.
Yeah.
Wasn't no snow plow bent on them or anything. And the old bus slipping, you know, you hit a brake and the bus would slide a little bit. And you had to realize, you know, going down here, they put in another gear and all that kind of stuff.
That's a lot. Can you imagine? Imagine your kids when they were 16, giving the keys to a school bus.
No way.
I know.
No way. And you think about kids that would want to take advantage of the fact that, oh, you know, that's Frank. He's our age. You had to, I'm sure, had to be a disciplinarian sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And back then, you could let a kid, okay, get off the bus and let him and go. You walk home, get home the best way you could.
Did you have to do that?
You could do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but the other thing is, you knew every one of those kids, and you knew their parents.
Kid. Most of them, you know, I knew every one of them. So, you know, they knew me, so, you know, there's no problem.
Some of them were your peers, though. When you were driving all the way to Walker Grant, they were your classmates.
They were older than I was.
But, yeah.
I had my sister, my cousin, and two cousins. They were older than I was. They were seniors. I was a junior.
Yeah. I remember the first couple of years ago is when I first heard the story when you and I were out around and you told me the story. Couldn't believe it.
But I think it's not just Stafford history, right? It's a period of time.
Yeah.
And it's all these stories are things that aren't the big important stories that we've all heard a million times about Stafford history and even African American history in Stafford. You know, all of the stuff like Henry Box Brown and Anthony Burns and Solomon Northrup, and those things are stories that have been told. And what we're really trying to work on is finding stories that haven't really been told a lot, and looking for those in many, many ways. And you know,
sure. Let me tell you another bus driving story too. I was driving a 1941 Chevrolet, and this was in 1955. The only time you got warm was you sitting on the front seat. And six or six passenger bus.
Mm-hmm.
One morning, I look up in the mirror, and on the back seat, it was a little girl in the first grade, and she was crying. So I pulled over there in Earl's parking lot, stopped the bus, cut it off, went back there and says, honey, says, what's the matter with you? Someone messing with you? She said, no. Nah. She says, I'm cold. So I said, you're cold. And I knew she's cold. Because she lived on a farm, and you know, you walk out to the road, and you had to wait till the bus comes. See?
Yeah.
So she's in first grade. I picked up in my arms, took her to the front, set her on the heater, and then took off. Sit back in my seat and took off. And I called her my heater girl.
Yeah.
She must have been grateful.
Oh, yeah. But I thought sometimes, you know, kid messed with kids.
Sure.
She said, no, I'm cold.
Yeah. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. Frank White here, Sue Henderson here. Stafford's African American history, our focus this morning. Quick break, and we'll wrap it up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by EV Mobility, here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Wow, great stuff this morning. Stafford's African American History. Frank White here. Sue Henderson is here. And one more story.
You know, Ted, we have been trying at the museum, and Frank's been working on it too, about looking for stories that haven't been told. But we're also trying to talk about history is being made now, or, you know, it's recent history. It's not just him having been a bus driver. But Frank, tell us the story about William Braxton, who was a bagger out there at a store on 610, right? We're talking maybe in the early 70s.
Yeah, William Braxton was a bagger. I think it was John on Route 610. And he took this groceries out to the lady, opened the trunk of the car, mm-hmm. putting the groceries in. Having to look around, and the car, it was on the incline. A car was moving toward him. The woman was pregnant. So he pushed the woman out the way, but he couldn't get out of the way. And the car pinned his legs against the car he's putting the groceries in. And what had happened was a kid in the car, and the parent did not put the brake on, so the kid did not leave it in gear, so the kid let the brake down, and the car moved down. Okay, Mr. Braxton broke both his legs.
Yeah.
They said he would never walk again. This was in 1969. 1996.
76 or 96?
In 1996, they came out, the Olympic was going to have Olympic in Atlanta, Georgia. And it would take its flag from Athens, Greece to Atlanta, Georgia. And they wanted heroes to carry the flag. Well, I'd heard the story with Mr. Braxton. I knew Mr. Braxton. I said, Mr. Braxton, you're a hero. You can carry the flag. He said, I'm not a hero. I said, yes, you are. And I talked to him, and he said, no, I'm not a hero. I said, look, I tell you what you do. If you don't think you're a hero, just to appease me, let me send your name in. He said, okay, send my name in. I sent his name in. He came back. They said he was a hero. He carried the flag. And he walked 2 miles through Stafford County with the flag. And so maybe a year or so later, I saw him one day, and he said, I'm going to give you this flag. I said, what can you give me the flag for? He said, because it's your flag. I said, not my flag, it's your flag. He said, you're the hero. He said, if you hadn't aggravated me, I never would have done it.
But
so
even,
I still have that flag.
But even these kinds of stories, right? And I mean, that 96 Olympics was pretty important for Stafford history anyway because of all of our local boys
the swimmers
in the pools.
Yeah.
But it's these stories, right, to capture these stories and to tell these stories. And in the totality of our history and our culture is all of these kinds of stories. These topics happen to be about African Americans, but we all have these kinds of stories, right? And that's one of the things we're going to work hard at doing is capturing these kinds of stories at the Stafford Museum.
You got to come back just because I think of all the issues we talk about and all the things, this really is. This is something to capture, and thanks for the museum for putting a lot of this together, and for you, Frank, I've got you dropped by it, and I treasure this. The poetry book you gave me, and just these stories are just terrific, and really talk about life in this area, and like you say, Sue, it's not just the stories back in the 1860s.
Yeah, or the 1760s or whatever. It's the 1960s,
yeah.
And 2030s. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll do this again. We'll do much more. And we in the days ahead, we'll be talking much more, too, about the Stafford Museum and Cultural Center. Frank, you really are the keeper of knowledge. You have done so much work. You have so many papers there and information. Thanks for what you continue to provide for this community.
Thank you for having me.
And Sue, thank you for all that you continue to do. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism this morning. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the morning.
Reportedly, they've lost